I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. Perhaps your New Year's resolutions include weight loss, more exercise, or being more organized. Do they happen to include reduce, reuse, and recycle? How about I will drive less, or I vow to take public transportation more often? Today, we hear from leaders of Kansas City's Bridging the Gap and the National Resources Defense Council about environmentalism in 2012. We'll talk about what each of us can do to improve the air we breathe, protect the water we drink, and contribute to a healthier planet. We'll also examine potential legislation governing greenhouse gases, talk about green energy production, and look at five green things you can do to improve the environment this year. It's Up to Date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. Steve Kraske is away. I'm Brian Ellison. Protecting the environment, caring for the earth, not controversial ideas on their face, but in today's political and cultural climate, they are fraught with complexity. Last year saw significant debates over old and new environmental laws and regulations, and activist groups swung back and forth between loving the Obama administration's policies and shaking their heads in disappointment. But politics or not, the reality is that here in Kansas City and around the country, individuals are trying to make a difference, changing little things in their lives, and sometimes big things too, in an effort to reduce their waste, lessen their carbon footprint, or clean up the world. So today we talk about the new year in green, the environment in 2012. Welcome Kristen Riott. She's the executive director of Bridging the Gap, which does community education and action about the environment here in Kansas City. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad you're here. And also welcome Henry Henderson. He's joining us by phone from his office in Chicago, where he's the Midwest director for the National Resources Defense Council. Henry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well.
Good.
Later in the program, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Have you resolved to make a change to benefit the Earth this year? What will you do differently? Or why won't you do anything differently? You can post your thoughts now on the KCUR Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. Before we look at the year that we've just begun, I think it would be good for us to start with a look back at 2011. Henry Henderson, was this a good year for the Earth?
It was a noticeable year for the Earth in terms of being one of the most serious years in terms of storms and being ravaged by results of climate change coming upon us.
So from a strictly scientific or environmental standpoint, it kind of a mixed bag, it sounds like.
Well, it was a dramatic year in terms of how much damage and how much suffering was inflicted on the world at large and on the United States in particular in terms of the results of polluting the atmosphere with global warming pollution.
Locally, Kristen, do you feel like this has been a significant year for the environment?
Well, I agree with Henry about it's very noticeable what happens to us in terms of weather disturbances. I heard last night that December was the warmest December on record. I'm not sure if that's a national record or even a global record, but I too find the weather very noticeable, and certainly the results of climate change are pointing out to be very expensive for us as a nation.
Henry, the change in the climate, certainly a topic of much conversation from the Republican presidential campaign trail to daily water cooler conversations. Is there any suggestion that in terms of the pollution that is thought to cause climate change, that's getting worse, better? Is that changing?
Well, it's increasing, unfortunately. There are a lot of things that are being done that show a path to how to address this, but I think we're well on the way toward things that are actually literally in the pipeline that we're going to have to become, we have to accommodate ourselves to, and that brings in a lot of action that needs to take place on the local level. on dealing with storms, dealing with heat in particular, loss of water resources, et cetera. So there's a lot that is on the agenda that is not merely national or global, but a lot that comes down to communities where the rubber really hits the road.
And we'll talk here in this hour a little bit about some of the particular ways, the particular arenas for action that that many groups and many individuals are trying to undertake. Let's go back to Washington, D.C. for a moment, though. 2011 saw a number of conversations that had relevance for the environment in the halls of Congress and of the White House. What were some of the most significant events in the past year, Henry?
Well, I think there are a couple of very serious events. In December, we had an interesting thing happen out of the EPA with finally moving a series of regulations on dealing with hazardous air pollutants, particularly mercury, which is an intense neurotoxin, which has not been adequately controlled in coal-fired power plants, and the issuance of these regulations will significantly increase the protection to children and have an impact on health and safety of the American people. Another important thing that emerged is an onslaught on environmental protections that have been like a keystone of American public policy for the past 40 years that issued with a great deal of bipartisan support on the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and there have been just an unbelievable amount of attacks to try to move those things back and prohibit the EPA from actually protecting the public. And that's been dramatic.
And Henry, a lot of the debates about those changes in policy come down generally to economic arguments, that there's an argument being made that the environmental regulations in place are somehow too stringent. They're causing it the difficulty for companies, for corporations. They're costing jobs. They're costing income at a time when the country is obviously in a significant economic downturn. Isn't that to be expected, that there might have to be some sacrifices on the environmental front?
Well, if you have a very skewed understanding of what the economy is actually about, if you look at the fact that there are overwhelming costs to the public and to individuals with regard to asthma, with regard to heart attacks, with regard to days lost on the job, and that you actually don't account for them in the bottom line of businesses that are using the air as if it were a cesspool, then perhaps you might have an argument. But the fact that a whole range of businesses have effectively and adequately observed the law and standards, and in doing so have created a whole range of jobs and helped the public, then you've got a different understanding about what the economics actually are.
Sure.
The fact that you pollute and dump things that cause people health problems freely into the atmosphere is not really a free market. It's a search for a free lunch.
Henry, can you give us kind of an example of one of those sort of companies or movements that is making an economic creating an economic benefit as well as an environmental benefit?
Well, we look at, for instance, some of the utilities like AEP in Ohio, where we're doing a great deal of work on energy policy, and the company is making significant investments in energy efficiency, which cuts back on the use of energy. It saves people money. It puts actual people to work in terms of refitting buildings and making them more efficient. Thus saving the businesses that use those buildings and the people who live in the houses that are retrofitted. It saves them money. So you're putting people to work to save energy and create a more efficient economy. Those are good jobs, and it makes sense, and it cuts back on pollution. So that's one example.
Yeah, that's Henry Henderson. He directs the Midwest region for the National Resources Defense Council. Also have Kristen Riott here, Executive Director of Bridging the Gap here in Kansas City. We're talking about the environment in 2012 here on Up to Date on KCUR. Kristen, locally, have there been significant developments in the past year?
Well, I want to kind of reinforce a couple of the things that Henry just said. Bridging the Gap is the home of two business-related programs. One is the Environmental Excellence Business Network, which is a group of 40 to 50 companies and a bunch of individuals who get together almost every month at a corporate headquarters to talk about going green. And we find that most of these very progressive local companies really get it, that going green actually is good for the bottom line and good for the economy. And we had a very active year this past year. We are all over the place with Lafarge Cement and Hallmark Cards and a bunch of the progressive companies here in Kansas City. We also have a very active year with our Byproduct Synergy Network. And that is a network of – it's kind of a subset, really, of the Environmental Excellence Business Network. But it's companies who are exchanging materials so that one company's waste becomes another company's raw materials or inputs. So, for example, Hallmark's leftover Christmas ornaments, which are produced in, you know, by Hallmark headquarters here in Kansas City, become actual fuel for cement manufacture, which helps to reduce the need for mining coal. So I just wanted to echo what Henry just said, that this is the direction of more employment. This is the direction of better bottom lines to go green for corporations.
Mm-hmm. Legislation and politics aside, the earth, after decades of efforts at awareness raising and at some efforts of environmental regulations, you've said that it isn't getting a whole lot better. What do we make of that? What needs to be different?
Mm-hmm. It's a very very interesting large question. I think that I certainly don't want to be in a position here of sort of doom and gloom. I think there have been unquestionable benefits that have occurred through the last 40 years of environmental attention, particularly in the United States, where we have had significant increase in good air quality, good water quality, protection of resources, and it's paid off dramatically in terms of well-being to the American people. I think we're in a position at present where there are questions about what is the way forward, and that the complexity of some of the issues has made it somewhat harder to leverage, you know, a broad, clear path. And that's tied to, I think, also an unprecedented assault upon environmental protections along the lines, as you started off the discussion about, is it indeed a trade-off between economics and environment, and a successful assault to try to make environment a niche issue that is just the interest of a series of irrelevant aesthetic interests, as opposed to what goes to the heart of our society. So I think we've got a great deal more discussion to move forward in terms of what actually are the connecting dots on a way forward to continue, you know, the American effort to improve our lives, reward innovation, and protection of the dignity of our citizens. So, I mean, there's a public discussion that needs to take place that we need to channel into, and I hope we can do a little bit today.
Well, let's, in fact, make this a more public discussion. I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Let us know what you think is the state of the environment here in having come through 2011, and what should be on the environmental agenda for 2012. 816-235-2888, and you can always email us at uptodate@kcur.org. Let's talk to Andy in Blue Springs. Andy, good morning.
Hi. Your guest mentioned earlier about an increase in extreme weather due to climate change. I'm curious if they've actually looked at the studies that show pretty clearly that just plain that happening, you get an increase in costs, due to inflation, you get an increase in notice because of better observations, but you don't actually show any increase in extreme weather. So where are they coming from?
You know, Andy, this is Kristen, and climate change, particularly here in the Midwest, has become such a politicized issue. And we deal with the questions like yours every day at Bridging the Gap when we're in front of audiences. What we ask people to do is to make sure that whatever data they're looking at comes from resources that are not politically motivated. For example, you can check out the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is a very good source for non-political information, the Hadley Center in England. Most of these great scientific institutions, in fact, almost all of them, agree that what we are seeing is directly, though no one incident can directly be pinned to climate change. Cumulatively, these events are a result of a warmer planet.
Perhaps you should look at the NOAA site again. I was looking at it yesterday for tornadoes specifically. The site itself says they've had more observations of tornadoes in the last 50 years, but it's pretty clear there haven't been more tornadoes. Same with hurricanes. And that's from the NOAA site.
It's my understanding that the number...
I can give you the page.
It's my understanding that the number of tornadoes has not necessarily increased, same with hurricanes, but that the intensity of these events has increased.
Andy, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for allowing that conversation to happen here this morning. Let's talk to Robin in Baldwin City. Robin, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question or comment here?
I've just returned from Durban. I was part of the civil society events at the UN Summit on Climate Change, which was an extraordinary experience, and I understand there were about 20,000 of us there showing up from all over the world with sincere concern for the aftermath that so many countries are dealing with now from natural disasters and climate change. And I just felt as if the showing from the U.S. was very, very poor at that event, and that we are not, as a country, taking the leadership that we could globally. And I would like to know what we as ordinary citizens can do to encourage our government to take some leadership in addressing climate change issues.
Robin, thanks for your call. Henry Henderson, at the National Resources Defense Council, you're regularly trying to connect folks with the government to get some environmental things accomplished. What do you recommend for Robin?
Yeah, we were NRDC was very much involved in Durban as well, and I don't know if Robin ran into any of our people there, but it is clearly one of the major issues we need to address and that we're advocating get addressed. And there are parts of what needs to happen. I think it's going to be very difficult to see a national act move forward in this Congress that will actually move us into the position where we're contributing to a national effort to deal with this. But you've got places like there's the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative in the Northeast, where you have an existing cap-and-trade program that is actually helping reduce and create economic opportunities for utilities to actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions. You've got a similar thing happening in California, and this past year, one of the high watermarks was with regard to automobile efficiency, which the environmental community, the auto workers, and the auto manufacturers all signed on together in support of significantly reducing the amount of energy that is used to keep us mobile. So I can see things happening on particular parts of the economy, particular parts of utilities and the manufacturing base.
And generally at a state or local level.
The state or local level, but what happened with the automobile rules is it's a national level initiative that was signed on to by multiple parts of civil society and the manufacturing economy that has been embraced by the federal government. So there is room for and actual things we can look at in terms of bright moments.
You know, Henry, another point that Robin made was that she was disappointed in the United States showing at the climate change conference, which I guess is a criticism of the Obama administration. The environmental movement clearly supported President Obama's election 3 years ago. Sort of a mixed bag is generally the impression folks have.
Well, I mean, this is not what you'd call an unambiguously environmental administration, and there are a whole range of issues that circle around that. And part of it is the fact that you've got unmitigated number of attacks on the building blocks of the American environmental pillars that have to be repeatedly responded to and fought. But so you've got a mixed bag. We had a great deal of disappointment with the administration pulling.
Looks like we lost Henry. We'll try to get that connection back here in a moment. Let's see here. We're going to go to Kristen. I'm sorry, Kristen, to put you on the spot.
I'd like to mention a couple of positive things from the Obama administration. One of the and I'm not an expert on how all of this came down, but for example, the city of Kansas City, Missouri, received a significant amount of money through the ERA legislation that is going toward home weatherization in the Kansas City area. And home weatherization is a win-win for everybody. It helps to put money back in citizens' pockets when your home is well insulated, and it also reduces the amount of coal-fired electricity and other expenditures of fossil fuels into the atmosphere. So I think the Obama administration was very quick to provide cities with federal funding for that kind of initiative, and we're still benefiting from it in Kansas City.
Henry, I'm sorry we lost you in the middle of your sentence there.
I'm terribly sorry.
Welcome back. I think it was our fault. So you were in the midst of saying that
just there are ups and downs.
Right.
And you know, we were disappointed with the pullback on increasing the ozone standards, which were basically scientifically driven, which has been historically the way the Clean Air Act works. Is if you've got a consensus about what is the level from a health perspective, you set the standards and then figure out how to reach them. But that was pulled back. So that was a disappointment. But there have been some very important things, just like Kristen was just talking about, in terms of funding significant investment in energy efficiency that is transformative. So we've got a lot to look forward to in terms of increased investment in coming from this administration.
In the second half of our program, I want to talk a little bit about the individual things that individuals can do to make a difference in their own community. But for a few minutes before we take a break, I want to ask both of you about the agenda that you have for the year ahead on sort of a global or national level. What are the legislative or other priorities that you would name for 2012? What's on the agenda? Henry, I certainly think the Keystone XL pipeline that we've been hearing so much about has to be part of that.
Keystone XL pipeline is very important. That is...
Remind us what that is.
Yes, that is a proposal by TransCanada, a Canadian corporation, to run a pipeline through the Midwest to the Gulf of Mexico to move... tar sands from Alberta to a port where it can be exported to the world. There's a problem from our point of view with regard to the controls over and the standards for pipelines, which put the large part of water resources in the central states into harm's way, which is why large part of the state of Nebraska has been against this because of threats to the Ogallala Aquifer. A lot of farmers and ranchers have been upset about it.
Right. So you had this sort of strange bedfellows situation where a lot of Nebraskans, not usually known for particularly green-friendly viewpoints, were opposing this pipeline.
Well, yes. I think this is how we've got to start talking about environmental issues, environmental policies more effectively, is that these are not These should not be strange bedfellows. People who produce food and fiber for Americans and rely upon adequate water supplies should not be at odds with environmentalists who are interested in adequate water supplies and safe food and fiber for Americans. This should not be an ideological question. It should be a practical question. And that's what we're trying to look at in terms of the coming year, in terms of our priorities on clean air, clean water, open space, and good health for Americans, is how do we continue to build on successful precedents that make it possible for Americans to earn well and do well and make the environment safer.
Kristen, a lot of these conversations happen at the federal level about environmental regulations. Are there state and local issues facing either local utilities or local governments that, Bridging the Gap is working on in the Kansas City metro area?
Absolutely. You know, what all of these environmental improvements will come down to is the physical work of installing more energy-efficient devices in people's lives. And that's one of the things that Bridging the Gap is very involved with. This year, we have not signed an actual contract yet, but we have an agreement with the city of Kansas City, Missouri, to help install more energy or water-efficient devices in a number of Kansas City, Missouri homes. We also are involved in home weatherization. Every house in America is a sieve for energy. Every house in America needs to be insulated. The attic floors need to be snowed under with insulation. Lots of other steps that can be taken there. We work very closely also with Metropolitan Energy Center on these initiatives. So the physical work that has to be done to change the environment is going on a daily basis in cities and states. I'll let you go ahead and
Which is consistent, I think, with what Henry's saying, that a lot of this is happening and not just in the federal debate. Let me take one more call. Let's talk to Jennifer in Fairway. Jennifer, good morning.
Hello. I am wondering if any of the speakers have heard of the carbon fee and dividend proposal. Basically, you know, looking to put a fee on carbon as it comes at its source, you know, so coal as it's mined would have a fee added to it, which would raise the cost to everyone for those particular dirty fossil fuels. And
create an incentive to reduce carbon emissions.
An incentive as well as allowing the greener alternatives a step forward, and then the money taken from that would go back to individuals across America.
and to our children as well, right?
There's a vote for future generations.
Absolutely. Jennifer, thank you
really
for the call.
Thank you very much. I'll take it off the air.
All right. Looks like you have your hands full there. Henry, is that idea gaining any traction?
Well, I think that the means of putting a price on carbon is a large problem. And I mean, we went through this significant national debate about a cap and trade program, which would be a way to put a price on carbon and thus do what the speaker suggested, is that you put a price on the carbon pollution. It comes in the bottom line of what the practices are from releasing global warming pollution, and thus create a more even playing field with cleaner sources of energy. I think we're a bit away from seeing that happen in the United States on a national level. It's part of what we've seen happen in the Northeast, but I think there is a great deal more work that needs to be done before we get to the actual mechanisms of making that a reality.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the reality of day-to-day life, trying to make a difference. We're going to talk about ways that individuals can have an impact on the environment, little things, maybe even big things that we can do to make for cleaner air or cleaner water or a cleaner world. Call us at 816-235-2888. Share the ways that you are making a commitment, your green resolutions of 2012, or your reasons for not making one. 235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. upto.org. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about how the news media cover politics, you can find that that episode with our media critics and all of our older broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, conversations on fantasy, horror, and science fiction in the movies. And Brian McTavish returns with our completely non-fictional weekend to-do list. Join us tomorrow for that on Up to Date. Today we're talking about the environment in 2012, national issues, and also very personal ones, what you and I can do to make a difference. We're talking with Henry Henderson, who's the Midwest Regional Director for the National Resources Defense Council, and Kristen Riott, who is the Director of Bridging the Gap here in Kansas City. We have our phone lines are full at the moment, but you can email us at uptodate@kcur.org. You can also call us once they open up at 816-235-2888. We want to hear what you are planning to do to make a difference for the environment. Let's take a couple calls very quickly about some of the things we were talking about in the first half of the program today, issues that are on the legislative agenda in 2012. Let's talk to Jackie in Smithville. Jackie, good morning.
Yes, I was wanting to talk about the Trans-Canada Pipeline a little bit and just remind everybody that this pipeline already exists, that the pipeline that they're wanting to run through there is just an extension of the original pipelines, and that there is a pipeline that runs through northern Missouri from the St. Joe area over towards Moberly and stuff that was put in the 50s that needs to be replaced.
All right. Jackie, let me see if I can get our guests. Do either of you know about what our caller is describing here?
Yeah. There are a whole web of pipelines that are aging and not adequate for the supply in the United States that he's referring to, and he's putting his finger on some of the infrastructure issues that put us in harm's way. Just recently, for instance, in right near where I'm sitting, one of these aging pipelines, which was carrying the tar sands oil, which is not what they're designed to carry, leaked like crazy. It took them a number of days to stop it, and it's a multi-million dollar cleanup that they haven't been able to respond to effectively. So there are a range of things he's talking about on the web of pipelines that we need to get a focus on, and it's one of the things we're trying to advocate for is before we build new pipelines over the Ogallala Aquifer, we need to get our pipeline standards in a position where we don't put our water in harm's way.
Let's talk to Cully in Kansas City, Missouri. Cully, good morning. Cully is apparently no longer here. Let's talk to Ron in Holden. Good morning, Ron.
Yeah, good morning. Good program.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, I wanted to say I'm an older fellow, and I'm a retired engineer from the aerospace industry, and we all know we have an energy problem. So I thought, well, let's see if we can't tackle it from here. And what I did was formed up a company. I'll not use the name. We do wind, solar, turbines. Have been doing research for 2 years. Our first intern from UCM, after he had worked with us, took him 2 weeks to find a job, and we were just tickled pink.
Well, that's great. So it sounds like there's one way that an individual is making a difference is through a company that's doing environmentally friendly energy work. Ron,
yeah.
Thanks for your call, Ron. We appreciate it.
We can do it. We can certainly do it.
We appreciate
you. I love
call.
That positive right. attitude.
Yeah, that's really, really, really positive at the beginning of the year.
And I'd add to that those industries tend to be more job intensive. That is, there are more jobs produced for the same amount of energy that's produced. So
that's right. Want to talk a little bit more about wind energy, in fact, since Ron brought that up. Is this something that for our region, and both of you work specifically in this region, is especially relevant?
Very much so, particularly in Kansas, which I believe is the second wind-richest state in the nation. I believe it's after Texas, and I think North Dakota is third. So we've got a whole lot of wind out there that is potentially a $7 billion industry waiting to happen.
And it's free.
And it's free. That's right.
I think that's one of the really interesting points about this, is that when you build a $4 billion coal plant, your costs just begin in terms of the inputs and what happens in terms of the waste that comes out of the smokestacks, whereas with wind and solar, you build the infrastructure and the stuff that generates the energy is free and from the sky. So getting our economics right on this is absolutely critical, and I think one of the things we need to be working for in the Midwest is getting a clear understanding about where we put the infrastructure to get the wires in place to get the energy generated in the huge opportunity in Kansas, North Dakota, et cetera, to the places where we need the energy.
Let's talk about some of the ways that individuals can be making a difference. We've all made New Year's resolutions. Often they're very focused on ourselves, how we can improve ourselves. But a lot of people want to know how they can make a difference in the world. And so here's an opportunity to think about resolutions. If you have made one, a green resolution for 2012, give us a call and tell us about it, 816-235-2888. Kristen Riott, Bridging the Gap, has for a long time had up on their website their five green things that people can do.
That's right. And Five Green Things was developed in response to what we perceived as a lot of confusion in the public about what they could do to go green that would really make a difference. So the green things are listed on our website. And by the way, there are 37 in total. But the first five are there because they were high impact and also because they were relatively easy and accessible for everybody to do.
And we should mention that you can link to the Bridging the Gap website from our website at kcur.org.
Yes. And our website, for those who are interested, is www.bridgingthegap.org. So the first five green things that we chose several years ago, I think maybe many of our listeners have already accomplished, but let's just quickly review them. They are to stop drinking bottled water, which is very energy and resource intensive, to turn the switch on your washing machine from hot to cold and never go back. Your clothes will last longer and you'll save a lot of energy.
But do they get as clean?
Yes, they do. The agitation, the actual mechanical agitation and the rinsing is what actually cleans the clothes. In order to kill all the germs that are on surfaces, you'd have to have much higher temperatures than what your washing machine is able to achieve.
All right.
The third green thing is to replace your incandescent light bulbs with the squirrely CFLs. And, of course, watch out for those LEDs that are coming soon. To install a programmable thermostat, which I think many of our listeners have probably already done, and hopefully they know how to run it. And then finally, to reduce your use of gasoline by 25% at least. Our cars are minute for minute the dirtiest thing that we do to the environment. There are lots of tricks to help you use gasoline much more efficiently, carpooling being one of them. But if you can't carpool, you can at least slow down, which can help you achieve that 25% goal right away.
We had someone on Facebook, Bonnie, wrote that she, once the bike trail near her home is complete, she plans to start riding her bike to work, which, of course, is another option.
That would be awesome. And my husband rides 60 miles a week to work in the warm weather months. I've created a monster with that.
We had a tweet from Cultivate KC who says, having local food is an easy and important way to impact your local environment. Visit farmers markets or grow your own.
That's absolutely right. And Cultivate KC is an awesome organization. As they point out, not only are we helping our local economy, but we're also reducing the transportation impacts on our environment of trucking food from all over the country and the world.
So talk to Ellen in Wichita. Ellen has just recently moved to Wichita, I guess. How are you this morning, Ellen?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. What's your green resolution?
Well, my green resolution was that when I moved to Wichita from Overland Park, I bought a house that has mostly south-facing windows, big tall ones. I put in Hunter Douglas dual-light blinds so that I can control the heat and control the sunlight. So that I can keep the sunlight out in the summer, but I let it in the winter. I set my thermostat, which is programmable, at 65 so that I don't get too cold at night. But in the daytime, the sun heats the house and my furnace does not run.
That's awesome. Passive solar is what that's called. That's great. That's a major contribution.
Henry, you were going to add something there?
No, I think those are exactly the kinds of things that individuals can do, and it can be done and been done in a way that is consistent with, you know, a really, really great lifestyle. I think there are things about one of the things that is facing us dramatically is a lack of fresh water, and it's a growing problem globally, but also in the United States. And there are things that can be done with regard to putting in a rain garden so that you capture stormwater runoff, don't have it go back into the lawn and not go into the sewers where it gets mixed up with other sewage.
And that's a major program this year. That's a major program this year in Kansas City is to disconnect downspouts that are taking rainwater straight into the sewers and instead dispersing it on people's lawns. The city of Kansas City, Missouri, is quite involved with that.
I think it's one of the ways in which municipalities become real leaders and don't have to rely upon federal or state government to do things. It's how you can distribute within the city ways of actually managing your water more effectively. It is an immense part of us switching to be able to deal with the impacts of climate change, and it's good for energy, it's good for the environment, and it's good for access to fresh water.
Are there still tax credits or other incentives available to encourage folks to make different environmental choices?
Well, a lot of the initial bolt of those through the stimulus package have been used and implemented, but there are still some within that are available through state agencies that continue to move those into the body public. So there are still some availabilities, but it's something that we need to be looking at in terms of continuing the tax credits and other parts of the stimulus to help us move into a more sustainable state.
We have email from Rex. He says, my wife and I try to recycle everything we can. We also compost. We've replaced all our windows and doors and re-insulated our attic. We'll also update our appliances as money permits. While this all costs money initially, we expect we will eventually save more than the original costs. I also have been able to work from home, which saves about 16 gallons of gasoline, plus about $50 a week, and an unknown reduction in atmospheric emissions, not to mention saving about 1.5 hours a day in commuting time. So a few creative ideas from Rex there for
those are fantastic. And I might suggest to Rex, if he hasn't thought of doing this yet, another place in one's house that is a big source of energy loss is where the wooden frame of the house meets the concrete foundation, and you can foam that in with insulating foam. It's sometimes called the rim joist or the sill plate. Foam around there, that's a big source of loss.
Linda from Kearney writes, it would seem that as a country, really as a globe, we must address the issue of overpopulation of the planet. We are, after all, like deer on an island. The planet's resources are finite. As each successive generation consumes as much as possible for itself, it leaves less for the next. So I guess one New Year's resolution could be to stop reproducing.
I agree with her on that, and it's been shown in study after study that the key to that is education of little girls in third world countries. Once you educate, family sizes tend to come down, and everybody wins. The cycle of poverty and illiteracy gets broken, and communities become more stable.
Henry, were you going to add something there?
I think that there are, going back to getting, not talking about population,
sure.
but on individual homes, I think that what has been said about what are available in terms of going to more efficient appliances and looking at weatherization of the home, there are steps that can be taken that, for instance, we have on our website, on it's nrdc.org, there's a part called Smarter Living, and there are specific steps and how you move through doing an energy audit of your home so you can significantly reduce the use of energy. That also keeps more money in your pocket. So it's an economically smart way to move forward, and there are clear templates to move forward on how to make your home more efficient and thus save yourself more money at the same time you're improving the environment.
We have a link to the NRDC website from ours as well. You can go to kcur.org. There was an article in the Kansas City Star Sunday magazine, Kristen, I imagine you might have seen this, about a couple who have been trying to eliminate all waste from their lives. And the story begins with them rolling their cart into the Whole Foods store with all their containers that they are actually – there are containers from home that they're going to fill up with groceries. And the husband expresses regret that they have to print out a price tag because that price tag is wasted paper. And much of the story is actually about sort of the strange looks they get and how they realize they're different. How long is it going to be before the kinds of individual steps that that some people are taking, that you're encouraging folks to take, are truly mainstream, or have they already become mainstream?
Well, I certainly don't think that has become mainstream. I am discouraged to see so many people still using disposable plastic bags every time they shop in my grocery store.
So paper or plastic, the right answer is paper?
Neither.
The right answer is bringing your own bags.
Right, exactly. And if you've forgotten your bags, just put the stuff back in the cart and wheel the cart out to the parking lot. I do it all the time because I always forget my bags. But I don't think that's mainstream. But I think that in answer to a question that you posed earlier in this hour, Brian, one of the issues that we're up against is habit. I mean, the habit of taking plastic bags, the habit of cranking up our thermostats to certain levels, all of these things are deeply ingrained in the brain, and it's very efficient for the brain to operate in a habitual mode. So breaking that can require a lot of moral support. We at Bridging the Gap believe that working together and being and creating a social aspect around going green is a really, really important part of it. With regard to the couple that you just mentioned rolling their cart into Whole Foods, what I would say that would be a good place to start with regard to that issue is to just simply try to eliminate one-time use disposables from your life, of which there are many, from styrofoam cups to napkins to, baggies, all kinds of things that really can be substituted for with other products, like, let's say, glass Pyrex bowls that you can store things in your refrigerator.
Go ahead.
Those are brilliant ideas. And I think, you know, part of the habit piece is that we think we can throw things away, but there actually is no away. It goes into our environment and creates a huge sinkhole that becomes a legacy of future problems. So I think this idea of addressing habits is exactly where we need to be focusing in terms of our individual lives.
And it's not only that they go into landfills, but every product that we use represents embodied energy that it took to manufacture it, that it took to ship it to your home, and that you used to bring it into your home. And so we want to use that energy very intelligently.
Let's take a couple more quick resolutions from some of our listeners. Charlie in Fontana, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your resolution? How are you being green?
We just remodeled our house, put on a couple of room additions, and rather than use high-end energy-intensive fiberglass insulation, we use recycled blue jeans.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we also grow as much of the food as possible that we eat, and I hunt to provide meat. So
recycled blue jeans, Charlie? Forgive me.
Yeah.
How does that work?
It's cotton fiber.
I'm envisioning jeans. You're just stuffing blue jeans into the wall.
Sounds like my son's dresser drawer.
Yeah, they take the blue jeans, they grind them up, form them into pads, and they are extremely energy efficient, a higher R value than an equivalent amount of fiberglass insulation, and they're, you know, preserving a little bit of the environment and not ending up in the landfill.
How does the cost compare to regular insulation?
It's a little bit higher, but not that much.
Okay, great. Appreciate the call, Charlie.
Definitely worth the extra cost.
Thanks for sharing that idea. Very quickly, Shirley in Raytown, good morning.
Good morning. I would like to quote something I heard on Morning Edition on KCUR this summer. It says, what you choose to eat is more important than where it's grown, even considering transportation costs. If you're trying to reduce your carbon footprint, you'd do better to eat an apple from New Zealand than a steak from your local farm. Mm. And if everybody would eat no red meat for one day a week, it would decrease carbon emission more than all of that from autos in the U.S. And because cattle raising is the highest contributor to the polluted environment, transporting corn and for feed and burping and pooping of cows, etc.
We'll have to end it with the pooping of cows, Shirley. So,
all right,
so
very good.
Thank you so much for calling. We have been joined this hour by Kristen Riott, Executive Director of Bridging the Gap, and Henry Henderson, the Midwest Director for the National Resources Defense Council. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
You'll find more information about them and about our previous broadcasts and podcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, conversations on fantasy, horror, and science fiction in the movies, and Brian McTavish returns with our weekend to-do list. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Kim Noble, and Maria Carter. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. Sitting in for Steve Kraske, I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.